Get real advice about anything from two women who've experienced a lot of life. They want to share their joy and knowledge of life with you. These two women are young enough to remember and old enough to know.
And now the Chat with Women Network presents Lawyers with Heart with Amanda Dubois and Monica Carey.
Good morning and welcome to Lawyers with Heart. We're here at 1150 AM KKNW. My name is Amanda Dubois and I'm here with Lucia Levias, who's one of our fabulous lawyers over at the Dubois Carey Law Group, where we practice primarily in family law and we also do estate planning, but mostly what we do over there is divorce. And we have two offices. One is over on Lake Union and we have a brand new office that just opened in Bellevue. And Lucia, help me out. It's at Belfield Office Park.
Yes, correct? That's correct.
Mm-hmm. And Lucia's kind of staffing that office, so she's super excited to have her own place over in Bellevue. And we have lots of really happy clients who don't have to go across the bridge and go through traffic and make their way to Fremont. So we're pretty excited about our Bellevue office. So today we're going to talk about trial. And Lucia and I are both here talking about trial because we've both been in trial a lot lately. And so we thought it would be an appropriate topic while we still have our trial boots on, which are getting kind of scuffed up these days.
I definitely need a new pair after my four-week trial.
Yeah, no surprise. So anyway, let's sort of start by setting the stage. So trial obviously doesn't happen until way far along into the case. Well, actually at the end of the case. But before you get to trial, Lucia, tell us just a little bit about how you start a case and how it's sort of laid out over time.
So if you're getting divorced in King County, the first thing that you do is you file a petition. And when you file that, you'll get a case schedule and it will tell you that you have a trial date. And it'll tell you that your trial date is about 11 months after you filed your petition. So basically what the court is telling you is saying, okay, you've started your divorce proceedings and we're going to give you 11 months to get this figured out. We're going to give you 11 months to figure out what you're going to do about residential time for your children, about dividing up your assets, figuring out who's going to have the house, those kinds of things. And if you don't figure that out by the 11th month, we're going to call you into court and we're going to make you go to trial and have a judge decide those things for you. Now, everybody's required to attempt mediation at least once during that 11-month process if they can't figure it out without mediation. So ideally, people don't end up in trial in family law cases. And in fact, people who are represented have a very low chance of going to trial. But it's something that is, if you do end up in trial, is scary and unknown. And that's why we thought we would spend some time today talking about that process.
So basically what the court's kind of saying is they don't want people in the system. Like they have a huge number of cases, you know, in the court system at any time. And they want there to be some sort of terminal event. Like if you don't figure it out, you're going to come to trial. And it really motivates people, obviously, to get things figured out way before trial. Because what happens in King County is that as you get closer to trial, there come these court-imposed deadlines, which are time-consuming for your lawyer and expensive for the client. And so it's always good to try to settle the case in the first maybe 6 months or so, rather than the closer you get to trial, the more work your lawyer is going to have to do and the more deadlines that are going to come up. But there are certain kind of cases that are commonly end up in trial and not, you know, some are big surprises. I mean, every once in a while a case will come in and, you know, my client will say, you know I have to pay alimony and I know we're going to split the property and I'm totally ready to do that. And then the other side goes out and hires a very aggressive lawyer and the case that you thought was going to be completely amicable and should settle very quickly ends up in trial. But that's the exception and not the rule.
Yeah, I think there's some statistic, and I don't know exactly where it comes from, but that people who are represented by counsel, only 3% of those cases go to trial. I know that people who aren't represented by counsel, sometimes there's they end up in trial a lot more often. But it is the exception to end up having to go to trial. There are some cases that it's more likely that you'll end up in trial than not, because they're just very difficult to settle. And one of those types of cases is relocation cases.
So what does that mean?
So that's when one parent is getting divorced and wants to move with the children to another state or sometimes even another country.
Or another county.
Yeah, and sometimes it can even just be outside of the school district to another county. Now, that's going to be easier to settle if it's a close proximity relocation. But if somebody wants to move to California, somebody wants to move and take the children to Florida, or even I've had some recent cases with parents who need to relocate back to Europe, where they originally were from. Those cases are very difficult to settle because there's no middle ground. You can go to mediation.
You can't say, I want to live in, one person's in Seattle and someone wants to live in New York, and so we'll just all move to Minneapolis.
Right. So it's sort of an all or nothing, you know, and so it's, they're very difficult cases to settle. And they're very, you know, difficult cases in general, because, you know, nobody wants to break up a family like that. But sometimes because of necessity, people do need to relocate for jobs, for family, for other circumstances that are going on in their life that, you know, weren't happening when they were married.
You know, I was in a trial, I think it was last year, and, you know, and we have these law books, although everybody's on computer now, but the judge of this particular case had an RCW, which is the statute book in the state of Washington, and he picked it up and he laughed and he said, oh my gosh, my RCW opens up to the relocation statute. Because it's the one that I look at the most, because it's the most common kind of trial. He goes, it just falls open to that page.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's why.
Yeah, exactly.
So other types of cases that go to trial are when there are issues trying to figure out the characterization of property. And that's sort of a legal way of saying, sometimes, let's say that you had a business before you got married. And then over the course of the marriage, the business grew and prospered and did well. There are questions about whether that business is now a community asset up for division or whether that business is a separate asset that you had before you got married. And then there are all kinds of questions about whether the marital community benefited from the business to the extent that the value of that asset should be considered to be a separate asset, or whether the marital community didn't benefit from that. And so it has somehow become sort of commingled and become a community asset. And those cases, I've tried a couple of those cases lately because sometimes there's a lot of money involved and the stakes are pretty high. And the person who does not own the business kind of has nothing to lose. Because if you're in mediation, which is sort of a settlement conference, and the person who owns the business is willing to maybe give a little bit of money to that person, but not very much, then the person who didn't own the business, it's easy. They're just going to go to trial because if they win, it's a big upside. I mean, they could get a couple $1 million or more if they win. And so those cases, I find, are more common to go to trial.
Yeah. Anytime there's a complicated legal issue like that where even the lawyers can't agree, you know, they have different legal theories and there's a different case law that supports either lawyer's arguments, sometimes you need to go to a judge and have it determined on that specific case-by-case situation because, you know, while there might be a series of cases that that would uphold your position, there, you know, your case might have something so unique to it and so novel to it that you really need a judge to look at this specific issue and figure out if there would be an exception or if this would be, you know, looked at in a typical way. So those cases do end up in trial, too.
And then another kind of case that ends up in trial a lot, which are near and dear to my heart, it's called a committed intimate relationship. And this is like the wild, wild west of family law, as far as I'm concerned. Because the question is, so these are cases where people have been living together and they didn't get married and they didn't register and they may have been together for a shorter period of time, like a matter of a few years, or they may have been together for 20 years.
A lot of states call this a common law marriage.
Right.
So they didn't actually have a ceremony, but they've held themselves out as a married couple long enough that if they break up, it would only be fair in some cases to divide things just as if they had been married.
And what's so scary about these committed intimate relationships, about which we should do a whole show as far as I'm concerned, because they're scary, is that, you know, when you get married, you know you got married. You made a decision, you got a marriage license, you had a wedding, your friends were around, you have now a husband or a wife, and you have a relationship that's defined by the laws of the state of Washington. When you're in a CIR, which is this committed intimate relationship, you generally don't know you're in it. And you generally don't know. And if there's a dispute about whether you're in one or not, and there's all these factors that have to do with whether you are, you don't get to decide whether it's a committed intimate relationship. That decision of whether you're even in a relationship is up to a judge.
Right. So people can be living together for a number of years and one person can think, oh, we're specifically not getting married because we don't want to do that
exactly.
for whatever reason. And so they're living together and they're, you know, pooling their resources together in the joint checking account or whatever. But they've specifically opted out of marriage because that's something that they, for whatever reasons, I mean, they don't value that for their relationship or, you know, or they don't want to combine their finances or for whatever reason.
I have people all the time saying, I didn't want to be financially entangled. That's why I didn't get married.
Yeah. And then 15 years later, they break up and all of a sudden they receive a lawsuit from their ex-partner saying, you need to give me 50% of your retirement and 50% of the equity in the house and 50% of everything because we were actually in what would be considered sort of like a common law marriage here called committed intimate relationship. And it's very scary and overwhelming when that happens to people.
And sometimes there's a dispute about whether they were in that kind of a relationship and those end up in trial. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you what, when you have a client sitting in your office and you tell them that they have been in a committed intimate relationship, it's almost like it must be what it's like to be a doctor and tell someone they have cancer. It's like the look on their face is just like, what are you talking about? I didn't get married for a very specific reason.
Right.
So those cases go to trial. What other types of cases?
Well, sometimes there's just, you know, sometimes people just aren't reasonable. Shocking.
In a divorce?
Sometimes people just, you know, they, for example, have a 30 or 40 year marriage and they have a stay at home spouse and they don't think they need to continue to support that spouse. They don't think they need to give her a dime. I'll just say her because that's the more traditional. It's the mother who's or the wife who stays at home raising the children and the father out building a career. And sometimes those cases have to go to trial just because the other party is just being so unreasonable that it wouldn't you can't settle a case like that. And you have to go to court and that person.
Nobody can convince that wage earner that they have to pay their spouse.
Right.
Like the mediator can't convince them. Their own lawyer usually knows it.
Right.
Their own lawyer can't convince them.
Yeah.
And they end up having to be told that by a judge.
Right. And some people just have to go to court and have to be told something by a judge. They want their day in court, which they are completely entitled to have. And they need to have a verdict or a finding.
And some people are unreasonable about parenting plans.
Right.
I mean, some people are just saying, no, I'm the better parent and she's a horrible mother and this child needs to be with me and she should have, you know, see the child on Tuesdays.
Right.
So those type of people end up going to trial a lot. So the three categories basically are relocation, property questions, characterization of property, the legal characterization of property, committed intimate relationships, and when somebody's particularly unreasonable. And I know everybody thinks, well, my spouse is unreasonable, but there's a level of unreasonableness that we see sometimes that's kind of off the chart. So let's take a break, and we're going to come back and talk a little bit about what it's like to go to trial.
In an August moon, where are the stars of the night? You promised me too soon, because it's been cloudy all night.
So do you want to be known as the expert in your field? Well, you can by hosting your own radio show. Join the Chat with Women Network and host your very own talk radio show. Share your knowledge on air and become the celebrity in your industry. You know, if you've always wanted to be a star, then here's your chance. To find out more, call Pam at 425-922-1155. That's 425-922-1155.
They just told us right away that we're going to house you, we're going to feed you, and every single one of his medical bills is just all taken care of.
They've saved my family from financial ruin. It allowed me and my wife both to focus on the most important thing, which was the health and well-being of our son.
We have phenomenal research, outstanding clinical care, and the generosity of public, which allow us to treat patients regardless of what it takes. And that's what makes St. Jude so magical.
At St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, families never receive a bill for treatment, travel, housing, or food, because the only thing a family should worry about is helping their child live.
Doctors send us the toughest cases to be treated at St. Jude, and our patients come from all over the world.
When we come here, they told me, don't worry, everything's been taken care of.
We can never repay St. Jude for what they've given us.
Because of you.
Gracias a ti.
Because of you.
There is St. Jude.
I had a dream of owning my own business, but I didn't know what I wanted to do until I discovered home staging. 5 years later, I am now the proud owner of one of Seattle's most successful staging companies. If you have a dream of starting your own new, lucrative, and fun career in home staging, I can help you. This year, I'll be offering an opportunity for up to 16 students to become Advanced Home Stager Certified. For class dates and information, go to stagingforcharisma.com or email me at pam@stagingforcharisma.com.
Color clash. We live in a world rich in culture. Whether we travel the world or surf the net, it seems we're always picking up bits of custom, tradition, and fashion that broaden our senses of what's beautiful. This collection is about the blending of colors and textures. We dare you to explore courageously, disobey the rules, see with new eyes, and be true to yourself. Come in and enjoy the journey with us. At Ross Salon Spa, we're excited to offer a summer makeup makeover. Call for details.
Remember, you're listening to Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And I've been feeling down and blue, and it's clouding in my head. Instead of going out to some restaurant, I'll stay home instead. Well, I'll be loving you. That's what I want to do.
Welcome back to Lawyers with Heart. We're listening to Michael Jackson's new CD, I guess.
Yes.
Correct?
Escape.
About which Benny is very excited.
I love everybody.
I know.
He's grooving over there.
And it's the perfect music to talk about divorce. Thanks, Benny.
Oh, you're welcome. There's love somewhere.
Escape. I like
that
it.
That too. Yeah, all right. I've got that one.
That's perfect. So I'm Amanda Dubois, and I'm here with Lucia Levias, and we are lawyers, and we practice divorce law. And today we're talking about trial. We work at the Dubois Cary Law Group, and our website is dubois.law.net. That's spelled D-U-B-O-I-S, Dubois. We have two offices. One is in Fremont over on Lake Union, which is the perfect place to be these days. It is absolutely gorgeous. And we have a new office in Bellevue at Belfield Office Park, kind of like in the woods.
Yeah, it's sort of on this wetland area near the blueberry fields. And, you know, it's
Lucia spent a lot of time looking out the window over there.
I am. I live in the city in Seattle, and I don't
busted.
Get to see a
totally
lot of
busted.
Nature. So I have been. I'm like, there's a squirrel. Some swarm of mosquitoes. Yeah, no, it's really pretty over there. It's really peaceful, and there's parking, which is huge.
Well, it's close to the freeway.
And it's super close to the freeway. It's just, you know, sort of right off of 90 and 405, so it's sort of that intersection there. So, yeah, it's been great. And our clients are loving coming over there because they don't want, you know, a lot of them work in Bellevue but live in Seattle, and so they can come over in their lunch hour instead of have to take off work to meet with us over in Fremont. And then we also have a lot of clients who live in Bellevue as well, so they're super excited that we have an office there now.
Cool. Well, we're talking about trial, and before the break, we were talking about all the different types of cases that go to trial. And just to kind of recap, they're relocation cases. They're cases where there's interesting property and legal issues. There are cases of unreasonable clients and
committed intimate relationships.
And those crazy committed intimate relationships. So thought it would be useful to talk about how one would go about choosing a lawyer. And it's a little bit confusing, I think, to people, because some people say, oh, I need to go hire a bulldog who takes all their cases to trial. And that's one sort of end of the spectrum. And the other end of the spectrum is, oh, my gosh, I don't want to go to trial. I'm going to look for the most amicable lawyer who's got the reputation for, you know, working everything out and kind of being more on the kumbaya end of the scale.
Mm-hmm.
So, Lucia, what if you were going to give a recommendation to someone looking for a lawyer, besides just saying they should hire us, obviously, what would you say?
Well, they need both. They need people that are really creative at coming up with solutions and can, you know, and do have a high percentage of their cases settling, because most divorces should settle in mediation. But they absolutely need a lawyer who has trial experience. A lot of family law lawyers don't have trial experience, and in fact, they actually won't go to trial. So what happens is, if you hire one of those lawyers and, you know, everybody's thinking it's going to settle, and then it doesn't, you're a month out from trial and your lawyer says, I don't do trials. And then
we get those people in our office and it's scary for them.
Yeah. And so, you know, one of the first conversations you need to have with when you're interviewing lawyers to represent you in your divorce is what their trial experience is. Now, you don't want somebody who takes every single case to trial, because that's probably going to be somebody that's not a very reasonable lawyer.
And they're probably not going to negotiate in your best interest. And
right.
just between us girls, it's, you know, they make more money. You
right.
can make a lot more money taking your cases to trial because it's so expensive.
Right. But you want somebody who, you know, I would say probably, you know, family law attorneys, you know, probably go to trial, you know,
two to four or five cases.
Yeah, 2 to 5 cases a year. You know, and so you want somebody with that experience, because first of all, if you do end up in trial, you want somebody who knows how to do it. But second of all, having somebody who has a mindset to prepare you for trial is actually going to give you a better opportunity to settle your case in your favor, because they're going to, you know, go out and take those extra steps, like, you know, get an expert appraisal on the house, or get a CPA involved to look at the accounting, because they know that those are things that are going to be important if you go to trial. But at the same time, they're going to, that's going to help you settle too. The other thing is that, you know, we all have reputations out there in our family law attorney community. And when you're in mediation and you know the lawyer in the other room never goes to trial.
Like Jaws. What's the Jaws theme song?
Yeah.
Do, 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 do.
Yeah. You kind of feel like, well, this is going to be easy because they're going to settle, because
exactly.
they don't want to go to trial. So I can push and push and push because they're scared to death to go to trial. On the other hand, when they know that there's like, I know this comes up with Amanda. I hear, opposing counsels in our cases say, you know, Amanda's got a great reputation as a trial lawyer, and so they don't want to go to trial with Amanda. And so they're, you know, likely to try to work things out so that they don't have to face Amanda Dubois. Uh-huh.
Well, but I think it's the best insurance policy you can have, is that if you're in a mediation or in any kind of a settlement situation, if the lawyer sitting next to you is someone that the other side respects and feels
yeah.
like you know what you're doing, and when you say in mediation, okay, we'll just go to trial, you're not bluffing.
Right.
Because a lot of people in mediation say, well, if that's the case, we're going to go to trial. And the people in the other room are like, no, you're not.
Yeah.
Or if you do, I'm going to squish you like a bug.
Yeah. So it's definitely important to have that conversation. Even when you walk in and you think, this is going to settle, I want to just sit around a table and get this worked out, it's important for you to know whether or not your lawyer can go to trial and is willing to go to trial if need be.
And here's another thing, and what Lucia was just saying is super important. So let's say that you have a case and you're pretty sure it's going to settle. And so your lawyer says, you know, I really think we need to get an expert witness to take a look at this accounting situation, or I think we need to get an appraisal of this business or a valuation of the business or an appraisal of a certain piece of real estate. And the client's saying, well, you know, I'm really sure that this case is going to settle, and I don't really want to spend the money on that. And then what happens is the other side realizes that you're not getting your case lined up appropriately, and they kind of know you're not ready to go to trial. And so when you go into the settlement process or mediation, you don't look very strong.
Right, exactly. So it's sort of that old
penny wise and pound foolish.
Right. So, you know, an appraisal on the house costs $550, and people think, oh, I don't want to get the house appraised. We can just, you know,
Zillow.
We can use Zillow. We can Google it. But, you know, a court needs to know what an actual expert appraisal would say. So, you know, those kinds of things are worth it. And then you can use that in mediation. Also, you know, if there's like mental health issues, for example, and you might need to hire an expert physician or psychiatrist to review records and, you know, try to help understand what diagnoses are and those kinds of things, you know, those are worth it to do, because most family law cases are he said, she said. And if you can bring in an expert who doesn't have any stake in this, you know, in this divorce.
It's not your sister-in-law.
Yeah. The trial court is going to appreciate that and really look to that person to, you know, informing what their opinion is about the case. So those things are, you know, if you have a lawyer who knows how to go to trial, they're going to be trying to line those things up for you. And it'll strengthen your case at mediation. And it's an absolute necessity if you end up in trial.
Well, and the other thing is that when you're in mediation, if you have a lawyer with you who has a track record in court, you know, there's a lot of fabulous mediators, and we love them, and we use them all the time, but some of them haven't been in a courtroom in 5, 10, some number of years. And if your lawyer was in court 2 months ago, or her partner was, or, you know, like, one thing that's nice about our firm is that we have 4 lawyers now. Do we have 4 or 5? Look at me, 5. We have enough lawyers over there that we could talk to each other about what happened to you last week in trial, or what, you know, we'll have lawyer meetings and we'll talk about things. And so we've got a combined experience, not just of having been to trial 2 to 5 times per lawyer for your lawyer, but then she's got the benefit of the other lawyers in the firm. So the point is that if a mediator says, well, I don't think a judge is going to do X, but you were in trial a month ago, or your partner was in trial a month ago, or one of your other lawyers was there. And they say, and you can say to the mediator, well, you know, I was in trial and this is how a judge handled it. It gives you a certain amount of power and credibility in the mediation process.
Yeah. And just to back up a little bit, we're talking about what a judge will do because there are no juries in family law.
Oh, good point.
Yeah. So what they're called bench trials, which basically means that the judge is the jury. So the judge presides over family law trials, and which is a good thing. I mean, I don't think a jury of your peers of 12 people sitting there should decide what's going to happen with your kids and what's going to happen, what kind of treatment you need.
They do in some states.
Well, I'm glad we don't have that in Washington state. It's so, you know, it really comes down to what one person is going to decide. And the nice thing about having, you know, bench trials is that you have a judge that you can also, you know, is knowledgeable in the law, or you can brief them on the law. So you feel there's a little bit more of an assurance, a little bit. Every judge is different. But, you know, a jury, I think, you know, you don't know sort of what all their perspectives are and what their own experience is. So but just to clarify, you'll never have a jury deciding what's going to happen with your kids or what's going to happen
with
your divorce.
Not in the state of Washington. And yeah. I got to say, that on the subject of the judges, I think our judges try so hard. Because they know what a decision that they're making is. It's going to affect a family for the rest of their life. And I think it has to be so overwhelming because they only have you in there for a couple of days, maybe 2 to 5, or in Lucille's case, 15 days. And it's not that easy to get to know all the nuances about a family, which is why it's always best to settle your case, because you know your family best. But you have the best chance of a good settlement if you have a lawyer that has some trial experience sitting next to you in the mediation process.
Right.
Let's take a break. You're listening to Lawyers with Heart. I'm Amanda Dubois, and I'm here with Lucia Levias, and we're lawyers at the Dubois Cary Law Group. Our website is dubois.law.net. We have offices in Bellevue and Fremont. This is 1150 AM KKNW.
Wake up every day looking and feeling more beautiful with the help of Wink Lash Extensions. Located in downtown Bellevue and specializing in eyelash extensions, body bronzing, facial peels, manicures, pedicures, and waxing. Wink gives you an innovative beauty experience that combines services to leave you looking refreshed without being rushed. Visit our website at winklashextensions.com or contact us at 425-502-8178.
For the month of May, purchase gift cards for Mother's Day and receive a $10 credit towards your next service. And don't forget, Spring Beauty Bash is all day Friday and Saturday, May 30th and 31st. Receive $20 manicures and pedicures, along with $15 brow shaping, only at Wink Lash Extensions.
Does your mind ever seem to have a mind of its own? If you'd like to discover ways to gain control and win the struggle with issues like weight loss, bad habits, getting a good night's sleep, or even overcoming difficult situations, Find out why your mind works the way it does and how you can make it work best for you from a hypnotist who knows. Join Kristen on Mind Talk every second Tuesday from 8 to 9 a.m. live on KKNW 1150 a.m. Miss the show? Well, listen to Mind Talk every time on chatwithwomen.com. Visit mymindtalk.com for more information.
How to be a great dad in 15 seconds. Bike ride, go fish, walk in the park, phone call, milkshake, play catch, picnic, fly a kite, tell jokes, laugh, talk, read a story, tell a story, bumper car, swing set, bowling, pillow fight, cut loose, stay tight. Whew. Because the smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Felix Hernandez, and I'm a baseball player.
And I'm Macklemore. I'm a musician.
We are pretty different.
But when it comes to taking the anti-bullying pledge, we're on the same team.
No one deserves to be bullied.
So join us in our promise to stay positive, be kind to each other, and make our schools
a place everyone feels at home.
Together, we can change the game. Sign the pledge at mariners.com/change the game.
So do you want to be known as the expert in your field? Well, you can by hosting your own radio show. Join the Chat with Women Network and host your very own talk radio show. Share your knowledge on air and become the celebrity in your industry. You know, if you've always wanted to be a star, then here's your chance. To find out more, call Pam at 425-922-1155. That's 425-922-1155.
Some people know a good thing when they hear it. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Everywhere I turn, no matter where I look, the system's in control, is all run by the book. I got to get away so I can free my mind. Escape is what I need from the electric guys.
Welcome back to Lawyers with Heart. Benny's rocking out to Michael Jackson's Escape album.
I think we all are, just not me. It's not just me.
I am. I'm rocking out too.
Thank you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It just this case. This yeah. show.
Didn't know I was in a case. The judge is already here.
You're the case. Yeah,
right.
Benny, you're the
I
case.
Am the case. Oh God.
This show is about escaping from your marriage, so we're using
Michael Jackson. That's right. So I'm Amanda Dubois. I'm here with Lucia Levias. We're lawyers from the Dubois Carey Law Group. We have offices both in Seattle and Bellevue. Our website is DuboisLaw.net, and you're listening to 1150 AM KKNW, and this is the Chat with Women Network. So we are talking about trial, and Lucia and I decided to do this case because we both spent some time in trial recently. This case, I said the same thing.
I know. Because we've been in trial for so long.
We're just talking about cases, not shows.
I'm objecting in the, like, grocery, you know, aisles and stuff, you know, like, objection. Those are red peppers, not green.
79 cents a pound. I object.
Yeah, I'm randomly yelling out hearsay in my sleep. It's been bad.
Too much trial.
But we're here to tell you that we are amicable lawyers who love to settle cases easily, and that's actually true. But we've been talking about the fact that if you've got a case and you believe that it's going to be amicable, one of the best things you could do is be sure to hire a lawyer that has your back and that's going to be able to back you up and to help you put forward your best case by making sure that the other side knows that you have the added insurance of a lawyer who knows how to go to trial, which gives you a stronger position in your settlement process. And since almost all of our cases settle and almost all the cases in King County settle, we're not here to tell you that everybody's going to trial. We're just here to say that if you end up in trial, you better have someone there who knows what they're doing, and you better have some understanding about how the process works. So now we're going to talk a little bit about preparing for trial. And it's a pretty overwhelming process. And one of the things about taking a case to trial that's always really discouraging, it is phenomenally expensive. And part of the reason that it's so expensive is because the prep work is extensive. And in most family law cases, especially the cases that go to trial, because there's usually some interesting legal issue or a financial issue or a parenting issue, requires a lot of paper. And so we kill more trees than we can even imagine, although we hear that everything's going to paperless in King County pretty soon, which I think is going to be harder for everybody. But anyway, it requires binders and binders and binders full of like all of your bank records for the past, it could be several years, it could be 10 years worth of bank records and three big four ring binders that have to all be pulled together and organized and put together and indexed. And so,
and not just one copy, but then four copies, because the judge needs one, the other attorney needs one, you need one, the clerk needs one. So, you know, all of your bank records for the past 10 years times four is, it gets to be a lot of paperwork.
So most of us show up the first day of trial with banker boxes and those little wheelie, you know, those, what do you call those? Like a dolly.
Mm-hmm. Those little two-wheelers.
Filled with banker boxes, so, and all kinds of, you know, binders, and then you've got all of your supplies that you have to bring with you and your sticky notes and your staplers, and it's, you kind of set up shop down in the courtroom for a few days or a few weeks. So what do you do to get ready for trial, Lucia, from the client's perspective? Or let's even back up before that. We were talking a little bit about choosing a lawyer, and now your legal team is going to kick into high gear. So first of all, what kind of legal team do you want? And second of all, how does the client participate?
Well, so in terms of your legal team, I mean, we talked about earlier, you want an attorney who has trial experience. And it's nice when you have a family law attorney who works with other family law attorneys in that firm, because they can sort of pull on each other's knowledge in terms of preparing for the trial. But you also want there to be a good support staff, like paralegals and legal assistants, because a lot of the trial work doesn't have to be done by a lawyer who's getting, you know, $300 an hour, has to charge that amount. A lot of the paperwork that can be prepared for trial can be done by a legal assistant or a paralegal for a lot less. So that's important. A lot of, you know, a lot of family law attorneys are solo or one or two lawyers, and they don't have that support staff. So you're going to look at an even more expensive trial if you're not going to have a lawyer that has, you know, a lesser charging staff person to do a lot of that.
Either that, or you're going to have a lawyer who's stayed up all night making copies and isn't going to be particularly perky when it comes time to go to trial.
Yeah.
Even if they don't bill you for it.
Yeah. But because it's just so labor intensive in terms of the paperwork, it's you're going to want to make sure your lawyer has that kind of support staff so that you're not paying so much for that.
And here's what you don't want to do, and this happens to us all the time, is you don't want to say, well, I'm going to choose a lawyer who is amicable and who doesn't really go to trial, and then if it doesn't work out, I'll go get a trial lawyer.
Right.
That costs you even twice as much, because now you've had one lawyer prepare your case, and then you show up in an office where someone can take you to trial, and that person has to redo everything that the first person did,
mm-hmm.
and plus, the case hasn't been properly prepared necessarily.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, and a lot of times a lawyer won't take a case if it's too close to trial, because they don't feel that they can adequately represent you. And they feel that your case would be prejudiced to have somebody jump in, you know, a month before trial, because the preparation really needed to happen months before that. So, so you're looking at getting into a situation where you might have to go on your own if you can't get somebody to represent you, or the judge might have sympathy for you and extend your trial date to allow you to get your lawyer up to speed. But but
even still, that the first lawyer might not have gotten, I mean, getting up to speed is one thing, but then also there's having done things that were not helpful to the case.
Right.
Like, why did you do that? Or why did you not take a deposition? Or
right.
Why did you, you know?
Right. Because, I mean, typically when you're strategizing from the very beginning about the best settlement for you or the best outcome for you, you know, when you're working with that lawyer, they've sort of got the long view on how to get you there. So they're taking various steps throughout this process to make sure that you're on that track. And it might be you might have a different lawyer who had a very different track for you or had a very different strategy for you. So that gets complicated if you try to switch to a different attorney at that point.
So how about the client's perspective, and how does the client prepare for trial, so to speak?
Well, I think, you know, the client is in some way sort of surrendering, turning over, saying, okay, I'm now going to let somebody else make these decisions. I'm pulling myself out in some ways of being the decision maker, because we can't negotiate this. And so it's going to be important for you to work closely with your lawyer during that time to think about witnesses that are going to be helpful to your case.
Which should have been disclosed a long time ago. So that's another reason you want to make sure your trial lawyer is involved in your case from the beginning, because you can't wait to the last minute, generally speaking. I mean, sometimes you can, but the best practice is to have your witnesses listed timely, which happens several months before trial.
Mm-hmm.
But what you tend to do is you list a whole bunch of people and you get closer to trial. And then what Lucia is saying, then you really hone it down and see, who do we really want?
Right. And then you're going to be, you know, helping your lawyer review financial documents and going through those. And also you're going to be you will have received all the exhibits from the other side and starting to go through their exhibits. So I have my clients go through the exhibits from the other side and literally put sticky notes for things that they know are not true or there's an issue about, so we can work through those things in terms of me preparing for my cross-examination of that witness. So, you know, sometimes our clients before trial are spending, you know, 2 or 3 days in our office. We just set them up at a desk, you know, and we're basically working, you know, together. They're going to take time off from work, you know, and we just, you know, by the time we get to trial, we joke around our office that we end up knowing your life better than you know it.
That's exactly right. No, that didn't happen in 1994. It happened in 1995.
We start correcting the facts, like, you know, exactly when things happened and how much money was in what account on what date and that kind of thing, because it's such an intimate and experience, because you're just walking through every piece of somebody's life together.
Well, here's something that is...
It's a good thing, though. It makes sure that you guys are thorough.
Oh. Absolutely.
I mean, that's what people look for.
I don't want to not know anything
right
when I walk into trial.
I don't want any surprises.
I don't want any surprises. I want you to, and I, you know, my clients, they tell me everything, even if I'm not going to bring it up in court, even because the other side might bring it up, and I don't want to be,
they know more about your client than you do.
Yeah. I mean, I can't tell you the times that you'll be sitting in trial and somebody, you know, one of the witnesses will say something on the stand and you can see the other attorney just like,
What?
And they're looking at their client like, why didn't you tell me that, you know, this had happened, you know, kind of thing. And so, you know, those can be really not good situations for the outcome of your case. So, you know, it's a very intensive preparation process.
Along those same lines, and this is something that Lucia is really, really good at. You are going to spend so much time with this person that you want to have a lawyer that you feel is like, I don't want to say your best friend, but in a funny way, I mean, there's a really interesting bond that happens between a lawyer and a client to go through this experience. And so if you're looking at, you know, if you go to a lawyer's office and it just doesn't feel, you don't feel like friendly, or it feels cold, or it feels, you feel like you can't reach your lawyer, you can't get her on the phone, or you don't have her cell phone number, or, you know, something going on. Think about what Lucia is talking about now, and being sort of in the war room together with all of the bank records and ordering pizza at night and calling your kids, and, you know, your lawyer's calling your kids and saying, I'm not going to be home tonight because I'm getting ready for a trial. You want a relationship with your lawyer where you feel, you know, sort of like camaraderie.
Mm-hmm.
And Lucia is really good at that. I mean, your clients love you.
Yeah, I have a great relationship with my clients. And a lot of times it's also not just the client, but it's their family members. I end up, you know, the grandma, grandpa, or their parent, you know, come in, or sister, and because that's their support network. And then, you know,
sometimes they tell you things about your client that your client didn't tell you.
Yeah, exactly. Or sometimes, you know, they can articulate things better because they had a different perspective on it. And that can be really helpful too. So yeah, it is it's a really unique experience. You know, everybody that I've taken to trial, every client that I've represented, I have lifelong relationships with, because
you
know, I just,
I think we stay in touch with all of our clients we've taken to trial. Think about it.
Yeah.
Over the years.
Yeah. Because you know them as well as, you know, anybody really.
Exactly.
At that point. So.
So let's take a break. You're listening to Lawyers with Heart. I'm Amanda Dubois here with Lucia Levias. This is 1150 AM KKNW. We're from the Dubois Carey Law Group. We're going to take a break and come back and keep talking some more about trial.
Good. $149.
$149
at Quinault Beach Resort and Casino in Ocean Shores, Washington. Two consecutive nights, two people stay for just $149.
So let me get this straight. I can go to the beach for two nights, take someone with me, and we both stay for $149?
Yeah, total for both nights.
And I can still get the Olympic breakfast special for $2?
No, Val, that's still $1.99.
I don't suppose you'll go twofer on that.
I'll give you two eggs, two pieces of Canadian bacon, and two pieces of toast. But still, $1.99.
Wow. So a friend and me will head to the beach, pay $149 for two nights, and eat breakfast for under $2 a piece?
Yep.
What are we going to do with all the money we save?
Well, we do have a world-class casino.
I could end up coming home with cash.
Big cash, Val.
I'm heading to the beach.
Make your reservations early, because at this rate, we'll run out of rooms. Some restrictions and blackout days do apply. It's Quinault Beach Resort and Casino in Ocean Shores, Washington. Call 888-461-2214 or log on to QuinaultBeachResort.com. Quinault Beach Resort and Casino. Winners happen here.
Hi, this is Christine.
And this is Nikki.
And we're the hostess of a new radio show coming on 1150 AM KKNW every first and third Tuesday at 8 AM. And that show is called
Anything is Possible with Christine and Nikki. And we are out to empower people. Empower people, empowering people.
That's right. Empowered people, empowering people. So Seattle, if you want to be empowered, join us for Anything is Possible.
So, Jacqueline.
Yes, Mom?
I wanted to talk to you about something and... Oh, wait. Hold on. I just got a text. Oh, there's another one. Wow. Busy, busy me. So, anyway...
Oh, wait, Mom. I just got a message. My friends keep commenting on my comment. Oh, there's another one. So many comments on my comment.
Oh, I can't wait to watch TV tonight. Playoffs!
Hey, guys, check out my new video game. Pew,
pew. Wait. Mom, what?
Huh? What? Hold
What'd
on.
You say?
Wait a second, what?
This weekend, unplug. Take your family to the forest. There's nothing in the world like experiencing nature firsthand. Trees, paths, bluebirds, streams. Getting closer to nature can get you closer to your family. To find the forest nearest you, go to discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Are you in a hair rut? Need to update dull makeup? The artists at Ra Salon Spa can create a new trendy look for you. With years of advanced training and experience, our professionals offer in-depth consultations so that your look is personalized only to you. Book an appointment today and mention this ad to get $10 off your next service. Call 425-284-0404.
Following the herd is fine until they lead you off a cliff. Think for yourself. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Welcome back to Lawyers with Heart. This is 1150 AM, KKNW. My name is Amanda Dubois, and I'm here with Lucia Levias, and we are divorce lawyers at the Dubois Carey Law Group. We have offices in Seattle on Lake Union and in Bellevue, and our website is dubuislaw.net. And if you want to check us out on the web. We've got a cool website, and we also have a Facebook page. We're talking about trial, and because some people in a divorce, as much as they try to settle their case and as much as they want to settle their case, sometimes cases end up in trial. And we talked a little bit about the different kinds of cases that go to trial, which are when a child, someone wants to move with a child, or there's some legal characterization of an asset that's confusing, or there's one of these committed intimate relationships, or there's just a person on the other side or even on your side that's unreasonable and needs to be told by a judge how it's going to be. So we've been talking about how you get to trial, and now we've got just a few minutes to talk about what happens when you actually get in the courtroom.
So each case is assigned a judge, and you know, you get that assignment in the beginning of the case, but then you don't really know who your judge is actually going to be because the calendars get so full and judges have to shift things around, and they might have a murder trial that's going to go over 3 weeks and they can't have your trial, so you get shifted to another judge. So you find out who your judge is, and you arrive in the courtroom. With your boxes of all of your evidence, and you know, your witnesses aren't allowed to come into the courtroom, but it's a family law. Trials are essentially an opportunity for you to have a conversation with the judge and to speak heart to heart about what's going on, albeit you're in a witness box while you're doing it, and this person's wearing a robe. But
there could be random people walking in and sitting in the benches in the back, like high school students tend to. They go on field trips, and you're up there, and someone's testifying, and they're crying, and it's sad, and everybody's focused, and in shuffles a high school class.
Right. So there might be, you know, like, yeah, the political science class from UW all of a sudden, like, comes in, and you're, you know, talking about domestic violence or something, you know, very personal. But aside from all that,
it'd be tough because if you're a cougar or something like that in there and you have poli-sci class from UW coming in,
yeah, that's bad.
You're going to give you some good little heckling, I think.
Yeah, that's going to be, yeah.
A little rough.
Some issues that might break out.
Right.
No, but basically, the trial judges really just want to make a good decision.
And they try hard.
And they need to hear from you your story. So you're sitting there and your lawyer's going to ask you questions and you're going to be explaining your story to this judge. Who,
and presumably you will have practiced that with your lawyer.
Yes. So you know what you're going to be testifying about and you know what issues are important. And then the other lawyer has an opportunity to cross-examine you.
But let's just when you're being examined by your lawyer, all those binders that we were talking about, of all those evidence, part of that is your lawyer's going to be handing you binders full of evidence, and you're going to have practiced this, and you're going to be looking at various pages, and you're going to be describing. So it's sort of like, not only are you telling your story, and you can't take notes up there with you, you're telling your story, but you're also telling your story through the paper and the binders and the evidence. And so you have to be really well prepared to know, now we're going to talk about this bank account, and now we're going to talk about this piece of property, and now we're going to talk about the date that somebody withdrew $100,000 out of the account and explain the circumstances. So you're telling your story, and you're also admitting evidence into the court through your story.
Right. And your lawyer will walk you through that. They'll have you turn to Exhibit 1 and describe what it is, and turn to Exhibit 10 and describe what it is, and those kinds of things. But you're presenting that information to the judge. The thing that I think people get very nervous about is cross-examination, because cross-examination, if their spouse is represented by a lawyer, will be done by that lawyer. If their spouse isn't represented, and that happens a lot in court where you have one side that's represented by counsel and the other one that's not, they're going to be cross-examined by their spouse.
Which is always a little scary.
Which is really intimidating. And, I think the judges try to kind of,
they set the ground rules pretty strictly.
Right. Like, you know, your spouse can't come up and sort of get in your face and those kinds of things. But anyway, you know, so we all, you know, also you'll be prepared for cross-examination. And those are answering yes or no questions typically. And making sure that you don't try to answer something that you really don't understand the question, or you don't really, you don't know the answer.
And if when you're preparing for trial, usually your lawyer knows the places where your case is weak and where you're subject to cross-examination. So if you're well prepared for trial, I don't think there should be a whole lot of things that come up in cross that are, you know, it's not like on TV where someone comes in the back of the room and it's the surprise witness, or there's the surprise piece of evidence. Every once in a while there's some surprises, but you deal with them. But
yeah,
you need to be prepared to be cross-examined.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that people do have a stereotype that, you know, trial is this sort of Perry Mason, and there's going to be a smoking gun, and we're going to go, and, you know, there's going to be an audience that's in shock and awe over what's happening. And actually, from when you come into a family law trial, if you're not involved in the trial, it looks so boring.
I mean, those kids come shuffling into the back, and they have their little notebooks or steno pads, and they're taking notes and stuff, and you look at them, and within about 2 minutes, they're completely glazed over, like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, because it's very personal to the people that are there. Yes. But it really doesn't, you know, it's quiet, it's questions and answers, it's explaining, you know, there's no jury, so there's very little dramatics. I mean, the lawyers don't have to, you know, object with some big, you know, they
flourish.
Yeah, they don't need to, you know, throw their hands around and, you know, jump up and down, and, you know, any kind of performance needs to happen because there's no jury. The judge knows what the rules are and, you know, those kinds of things. So sometimes I think that can actually be a little disappointing to parties that were sort of, you know, wanting this to be, you know, a televised event. but it's, you know, it's pretty straightforward. And then you know, both sides will bring on their witnesses. To testify as well, which will include not only maybe friends and family, but also experts like a parenting evaluator or a CPA or an appraiser and those.
And the whole purpose of this is your lawyer knows what the law is, and there is certain elements of the law that have to be proven. And so every piece of evidence that's coming in to your trial is sort of part of a master plan of your lawyer, hopefully, that's meeting the evidentiary requirements of the case. And so what happens is you tell the story, like Lucia said, and you put in the evidence through the documents, and you get cross-examined to try to prove that you don't know what you're talking about. And then all at the end, all of the things that the witnesses have said should fit into this legal puzzle, and where you take the law, the case law, and the statutes, and you make an argument to the judge about why he or she should make a finding in your client's favor, because you have presented all this evidence in such a manner that's met all the legal standards and the other side didn't.
Right. And so trials can last anywhere from 1 day to 15 or 16, probably on the I just finished a trial that was that long, which is very unusual. But I'd say they're normally about, can be 2 or 3 days. And you will get a ruling a couple weeks after trial. So.
Ish,
depending.
That's right. Well, that was a lot of information in an hour. Thanks so much for tuning in to Lawyers with Heart. Lucy, it was awesome having you here. And hopefully you did get a vacation after your crazy long trial, and now you're back at it accepting new clients. So we're from the Dubois Cary Law Group. My name is Amanda Dubois, and I'm here with Lucia Levias, and our website is DuboisLaw.net. Take any more, it's not